will have public appearances. Public appearances are for folks that want to discuss anything on our agenda for these three committees, even though we're student achievement and performance monitoring. And the first speaker that I have who has registered is Carol Loebs. And you are welcome to come to the front next to Dr. Nash. And we have a limit of 3 minutes, which I'll be the official timer. I'll try to do my best to stay on board. And you can begin at any time.
I'm probably not like perfectly within the public comment dynamic, but I did want to, I'm Carol Loebs. I'm the co-facilitator of the Dane County Coalition to Reduce Alcohol Abuse. But I'm just here for purposes of an invitation. We know very well from the work that we've done on behalf of County Executive Kathleen Falk that middle school and grade school are important times to intervene and prevent further issues in terms of alcohol abuse. And so we want to invite you to an event that's happening this Thursday night from 6 to 8 at CUNA Mutual, the Round Auditorium building, the second floor auditorium. And it's the program will be put on by the Children's Education Center of the Milwaukee Children's Hospital. They've developed over time three online programs in a game format to deal with fourth through eighth graders to help them learn how to deal with and think about and explore the issues related to alcohol and other substance abuse. And the exciting thing about this is that they've had very good evaluations, but they would like to have a dense county in which a number of schools participate in their program so that they can have a countywide evaluation of this. And so if we're able to attract enough school interest and participation, they will give us the software for free. So we're hoping to have a good audience of parents, teachers, school personnel, and interested community members to come to this event. It's free and open to the public. And again, it's this Thursday, August 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Just one quick question. So could you send that to the board?
I have a number send that to the of them, I believe.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Who shall I leave them with?
Thank you.
We're going to start with, this is actually relevant to you. We're going to start with a report from Project Touch, which is our middle school pilot in Senate Middle School and River's Bluff and Stoughton. So we'll start with that. County Executive will do a welcome, and then we'll go into the larger program. So I would say come whenever you can. We would welcome that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Lori Rahela and Nancy Enderly, and you can both come up to the microphones there. And when you're ready, just go ahead and speak.
Okay. We want to speak in support of the TAG plan. The TAG plan has many good things in it. It has a sound mission and solid goals. We would like to speak especially in support of the action steps that plan for consistently grouping gifted learners together in our schools. There are some parts of the plan that we would like to see strengthened. One of these has to do with the action steps for programming in the middle school and high school levels. Currently, there are big gaps in programming options for gifted students in these levels. Students in the Memorial attendance area have to wait until 10th grade, and students in the West area must wait until 11th grade until they can have unrestricted access to advanced accelerated classes in most academic subjects. The state statute and rules and the national standards call for systematic and continuous programming and curricula for gifted students in kindergarten through 12th grade. In light of this, we would like to call for the middle and high school action steps to provide for advanced, accelerated sections of all academic subjects in every grade. I have three children who started out at Midvale Lincoln. During our 6 years in these schools, I worked hard to enlist teachers, IRTs, TAG staff, and principals to find appropriate curricula and programming for them. What the children needed most was to be grouped with other children with similar abilities and interests so that they could learn at a pace and depth appropriate for them and be with a teacher who would foster their contributions. Since I was not allowed to participate in decisions regarding their classroom placement, it was scary every year to wait until just before the school year started to find out if they would have academic peers in their classes or be with a teacher who had any interest or experience in working with gifted children. When my daughter was in fourth grade, she was placed in a class with no academic peers at all and with a teacher who had no training or experience in working with gifted children. The teacher had no idea what to do for one little girl who already understood the concepts and had mastered them that she was trying to teach to the rest of the class. As the school year wore on, my daughter was very frustrated with the other kids, and they became resentful of her. She was chronically miserable and cranky, spending day after day in a class where she was isolated and ostracized. Recently, she showed me a diary she had kept when she was in fourth grade. Flipping through the pages, she found an entry that she had written not long into that school year. I want to share it with you because I think it captures, in the voice of an 8-year-old girl, the way the district has handled the tension between struggling learners and students working beyond grade level. My daughter wrote this at the end of September 2004. My teacher makes me mad when she thinks there is a very tricky problem, and when she calls on someone to solve it, and they solve it, she pulls out her bag of candy and says, "Come here and take one." But then when I solve one, she only says, "Good. No treat for me." My daughter's 13 now. "You can tell I was bitter when I wrote that," she said. Not only were the math problems at the wrong level for her, but she didn't get any candy. Maybe the teacher didn't reward my daughter because she was used to Carolyn getting the right answers. Or maybe she didn't reward her because she thought that would hurt the self-esteem of the other students. Whatever the reason, the method didn't teach my daughter new math concepts, nor did it teach her to rise to a challenge. What it did teach her was that in public school, the struggling students get all the candy. My oldest child is 15, and he'll be a junior at West. Registration for him is coming up on August 24th. He's facing this date with some apprehension because he was unhappy in his core courses over the last 2 years, and his guidance counselor and scheduling principal gave him a hard time when he tried to get into an honors English class. Among other things, his counselor commented loudly to nearby office staff about the big shot sophomore who thinks he can handle honors English, and the scheduling principal berated him and threatened to fine him $300 for visiting the honors class when it wasn't on his schedule. I should explain that my son is characteristically polite and respectful, and that he had visited this class on my advice because his counselor had told him, I have no idea which class you should attend. Recently, my son came into the kitchen and told me, "I had a really bad dream last night." I said, "Oh, what happened?" And he said, "Well, it was registration day, and I got my schedule, and it was all mixed up. It had things on it like basic keyboarding and how to learn to use a mouse. I went to my SLC office to see what I could do to change it. When I walked in, the secretary was playing solitaire on her computer, and I said, 'How can I fix this?' And she turned from her screen to face me. 'I have no idea,' she said, and then I woke up. With this new tag plan, I hope our district will now have an idea of how to start fixing things for students who work far beyond grade level. There are gifted students coming into every grade in MMSD schools this September. For the sake of these children, I urge the board to adopt and to strengthen this tag plan so that the district will start giving gifted students an equal opportunity to learn and work and thrive in our community. Thank you."
I'm also here to speak about the TAG plan, and I'm speaking against adoption. I also want to start off by talking about something personal, or starting with some personal anecdotes and stories. took a lot of standardized tests in my life, and I don't think I've ever scored below the 97th percentile. And some of you might take that as evidence that these tests are terribly flawed. I know to some extent I do. I attended public schools where there was no ability or achievement grouping done till high school. And I feel that that experience and that the diversity of my classrooms enriched me as a global citizen, as a person who understands and cares about people in different circumstances with different abilities. I hate to see us losing that in medicine. Beyond that, back to testing and the idea of labeling. When I was in second grade, some diagnostic test that was given to me at school labeled me as learning disabled. It was a misdiagnosis, and after much back and forth with my parents, the diagnosis was removed, and I no longer had to attend the pull-out sessions. But 5 years later, I was in a meeting with the principal and my parents about accelerating, moving up a grade, skipping a grade, and the principal pulls out that diagnosis again. It was a misdiagnosis to begin with, but that label stuck with me through my entire public school career. So when we start sorting and labeling kids with these imperfect diagnostic tests, there's a lot of dangers there. I sent most of you a longer and less personal critique of the TAG plan, and I want to hit a few points from there. Number one is this cluster grouping concept has little or no empirical research. What research has been done is not peer-reviewed, and it was done in districts that were less than 1% minority. That means that important issues about increasing segregation, important issues about disparate impacts on minorities and low-income students have not been addressed in the research, period. Number two, one thing I do like in the plan is the idea of the individual learning plans for gifted students, but confining them to gifted students is offensively inequitable. That's part of your strategic plan. You should move on that for all students. I also like the idea of increasing participation of students in advanced courses, but you don't need to do a plan to do that. The Equity Task Force told you exactly what you need to do. I quote from that report, open access to advanced programs, actively recruit students from historically underserved populations, and provide support for all students to be successful. That's simple. You can do that tomorrow. You could have done it yesterday. My advice is, at this point, do the minimum to meet the state requirements and send this back to a new advisory committee, an advisory committee that, Maya, can I have one more minute? That, again, to quote from the report, gifted programs must establish and use an advisory committee that reflects the cultural and socioeconomic diversity of the school or the school's district's total student population. That was not done with this advisory committee. You need a TAG plan that is produced by that kind of committee. Last word on a different subject is that from what I understand about the budget proposals that are before you tonight, those parts I understand, I support. The parts I don't understand, we'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Mertz. And Mr. Severson?
Thank you. I'm here representing Active Citizens for Education, and I'm speaking to the budget gap and tax impact solution that will be discussed in the third committee later this evening. I understand there is not yet an agreement with the MTI on the teachers' contract for the next 2 years. However, I also know that in the current approved budget tentative for 09-10, you built in about a 4% increase in salary and benefits as a part of that budget. I think anything less than that should go to the deficit. Anything more than zero, I would say you're not exercising your fiduciary responsibility. If you look at all the other public players in the unions, they're all facing 1% or less and have for several contracts, or at least the last two biennia. They are not filling vacancies. There are cuts in positions. There are furloughs. There's cuts in pay, or all of the above for some of these union groups. I know it's tough. I would agree that teachers need to be paid appropriately. However, this is not the time to be talking about a 4% increase, let alone anything above zero. Your fiduciary responsibility is to find ways to deal with this. You did not have any plan B or C or D or whatever during the course of this last 6 months. You had opportunities to increase the number of layoff notices early on as a part of a plan B. Insofar as I know, you chose not to do that. You had opportunity, you've been talking for a year now about doing evaluation and assessment of program services and personnel. See no evidence of that whatsoever, so that you could really evaluate how money is being spent. If it's being spent, where are you getting results, appropriate results, and reallocate funds that are available. This is something that I know that you've talked about. I think you have intellectually agreed with that. You have the additional weight of the approval of a consensus of 62 citizens that you handpicked for the strategic planning process that identified rigorously evaluating program services and personnel. You adopted that strategic objective in July or August, July, I guess, but nothing has been done. How in the world can you really think you can go to the taxpayers and increase the tax levy for taxpayers who are also faced with all kinds of additional costs, increased taxes, opportunities where their seniors are not getting additional Social Security over the next 2 years, retirement funds have been cut, and so on. Just one other comment, if I might, and that is in relationship to the ARRA recommendations in the budget. I see nowhere in this where there's any reference to evaluation and assessment of program services, curriculum, personnel, and so forth in the use of that money. Now, if it's hidden in there, I'd like to have it clarified and more transparent, but I see none of that in there whatsoever. In addition, there's, I think, somewhere between $2.5 and $3 million that are identified as unsustainable. In other words, they're not one-time expenses. I would recommend that the board very carefully and seriously consider how, in approving any of those kinds of proposed expenditures, you're going to be able to sustain it beyond the two-year life of ARRA. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other